Thinking about self-publishing and don't know where to start? Join the Spa Girls each week for a fun-filled podcast with honest advice, tips, and resources. I'm Trudy J.
I'm Shah Barrett.
I'm Cheryl Phipps.
And I'm Wendy Vella.
Hello.
Hey. Hello.
We're all back together. The gang's back together. We've got no guests this week. You've just got us to listen to.
It's not just. Come on. It's not just us.
Very exciting. Sorry. It's a slip of the tongue. And this week we are talking about managing book projects. And it was a question that was asked of us, of a listener. And I'm thinking, Shah, you've got the question there in front of you and you can say mm-hmm. exactly what she asked us so we can kind of tell you where the evolution of the idea came from, and then we're going to get right into it.
Yeah. Cool. Absolutely. We've actually had this a couple of times over the years too, but this is our most recent one and it's worded very well. So let me go through it. Right. How do you structure the way you work on projects? Do you have one book on the go at the time or multiple projects in different stages? I ask because I've always worked on several things at once, but that has become overwhelming. So I'm trying to transition to a more focused approach on one book at a time. But I see some authors on Facebook posting how they're already working on 2023 books, in which case they must have lots to juggle. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts and how you each manage this.
Right.
Good question.
Yeah.
And I've seen those authors talking about 2023 and further out as well. And obviously in the traditional world, that is what
they have
happens.
To, yeah.
Working
yeah.
But sort of
they're not necessarily working on multiple projects. They're working on one project just for next year.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah, and we've had authors on the podcast, haven't we, that are working ahead, like they're working now on books that maybe are published in a year's time.
That's
we aspire
true,
to be like those authors,
we
to
would
be
love
fair.
To be like those authors.
So over the floor is open.
All right, there's crickets.
Okay. shall I go?
Go, Cheryl.
Okay, so I've changed quite considerably over the years, and I now pretty much always just work on one book at a time. When I say that, I can also be working on setting up the next book because I have different series. So for me, it's like a huge change in mindset to be focused on one book. And because in Cozy Mysteries they're very similar in that there's a murder and blah blah blah, I have been known to write the wrong name, so it just became a little bit too complicated for me to work on two projects properly, like to be totally immersed. I can't say I never do it, but I do it far less than I used to, and it's just usually one. But the things that made a difference to me when I'm planning out what I'm going to be writing next is whereabouts in the series I need to have the next book coming. So if I write three or four books a year, then I'm going to try and fulfill my obligations to each series and write a book in each of them. And there's other aspects of that too, like writing something for Christmas or something in the middle of the year. So they, I don't count those as a new book, but they're a project that I might be adding to as time goes on. So for me, it's doing something like that as a way to change things up, to refresh myself. Also the urgency, like I said before, of which series needs some love, and to focus, to drill down and actually focus on one thing, because there's so many other aspects, you know, with the marketing and all that sort of thing, that take up time. So even when you're working on one book, you're not working on one thing. So yeah. I hope that's succinct enough.
Yeah.
No, that's good.
That's good. Wendy, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I probably have changed and evolved a lot over the years. I think writing two genres is, I try to immerse myself in one at a time, but often I will get the idea for the second one and I'll go, I usually write historical contemporary sometimes for reasons that doesn't happen, but that's usually the norm. So I'll write, as soon as the premise comes to me of what the next book's going to be, I'll go in and set up a Scrivener document and go in and write you know, some detail, like start writing it, you know, almost the first sort of chapter or something like that. So it's more of a impulse thing, it'll be surprising you to know, more so than a planning thing, you know. I do write series, so there's an expectation that, you know, I must have this book at this time or this must follow on. But basically, I'm pretty ad-lib. I have to say, last year, everything changed a little bit insofar as I sat down and planned for the following year, which is something normally I haven't done. I'm just throwing up a book. But now I'm sort of, I've got deadlines that I'm meeting insofar as I planned that this book's coming out, this is this. And actually, it's worked okay for someone who doesn't like to be put, you know, shoehorned into a space. That's actually worked quite well. So far, so good. I've written three books this year already, and that seems to be going well. I've also got a collaboration I'm doing. So yeah, I think the structure is working insofar as the planning for when the book comes out, but I still don't plan how the book's going to be written, if you know what I mean. I don't know if that makes any sense at all, but
no, it doesn't. Just
it doesn't. Thanks. Just spin that my way.
I got all the planning, but no, when you say
explain, ask me some questions,
how the book's going to be tough. Written by that, you mean what the actual, like
the storyline? She means the storyline because she doesn't like planning the storyline.
So yeah, the storyline. Do you mean, do I know what the story? Do I plan the storyline? Is that where you come in with that?
Yeah, question? That's what I was wondering.
You don't know me that after all these
no,
years.
No, I don't. But I'm pretending I don't.
Oh, okay. It's a pretending thing. Sorry, I didn't know. So no plotting on this front, but I'm writing book 11. I'm moving into book 11 shortly for a series, so there's a certain amount of things that need to be happening in this book because there's 10 other couples there.
Yeah.
You know, so that side of it, but basically I have planning. I have a spreadsheet, clearly. And that's, so that works. And then I carried the Scrivener premise from the last book document to the new document. And then away I go with that. So that is, if that's where you're coming from.
Yeah.
I know. But so basically first draft, I knock that out however I want it to be. And then I go back in the second draft. And then I fill in the things like getting the names right, eye color right, you know, stuff like that. Because I can't write a book that slowly and have to stop every 5 minutes and ensure that I have this right, that right, that right, that right. So it's important for me to just get in there so I can write the first draft in 3 or 4 weeks. And then that's when the real tough stuff starts. So then I'll start with that. So yeah, if that's where you were coming from, that's where I was.
But you stay with, you like share all your writing one book at a time?
I do, usually, mostly. Having said that, I've just having a foray into Radish. So I'm writing Radish at the same time as what I'm writing, whatever I'm writing. Do you know what I mean? So because my deadlines are quite tight this year, I'm having to do that at night. So that's Radish is my night writing. And then I'm also trying to get the next book, which is the contemporary, sort of up and running in my head so I can just cruise straight into it.
Can you just explain what Radish is for listeners?
Radish is an online platform for readers, short bite-sized episodes. So you put in there between, say, 1,200 to 2,000 words, and you can, the first five, how I'm operating my Radish is the first five series in the episodes are free, and then they start paying after that. So they download and buy coins for that sort of thing. I'm very new at it, but it was just something I wanted to test, so that's also what I'm doing.
Yeah. And it's like a different genre, normal, and all the rest of it.
Yeah. Different name.
Yeah,
everything.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a secret project that we're not going to talk about,
and you will never know. Even under torture.
Yeah. Awesome to know. I get to torture Wendy.
Yay. So I hope that made sense.
You'll tell me when we're sharing a room.
Oh, of course.
No, you tell Cheryl.
I tell Cheryl everything.
So effectively, you're kind of working on one main project at a time, but you've got a tiny side project as well that's there, but maybe not taking quite as much mental space up as your main project, would you?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we're all different, right? She would have, like she said, her processes are changing all the time and refining and adjusting. And for me, it's always been, as soon as I'm nearing the last quarter of the book I'm writing, the second book starts to take shape in my head. It's always been that way. It's like, boom, that one's gone, and I know what's happening with it, and bang, the next one's coming in. It's like when I've nutted it out, can move on to the next one. Yes, Trudels.
So when you say that, are you, and you write historical, contemporary, right? So so if you're finishing your contemporary and you have an idea for the next book, is it always the next historical, or do you sometimes have the idea for what's going to happen in the next contemporary and you go away and set it up, or you always, it's always the next book that you know you, so your brain, you've set your brain the task of figuring out the topic for the next book, and it knows that it's going to be historical and it doesn't try, because
having said that, you know, when I'm writing a contemporary or a historical, I will come up with an idea and go bang, I'll just write that down and get rid of that out of my head, and that's done. And I'm sure Cheryl will be the same. She will have, and probably you, Trudels, you'll have little projects sort of percolating, right? Mm-hmm. We all have them, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that I'm the same, but I'm, you have to stay on track when you, when you're writing series.
And if you, have a burning desire, it's good to put it on paper and then leave it. And then, I mean, you can add to it. There's no reason why you can't open up you know, a document or something and add stuff to it, or have a diary where you've got room for that sort of thing and add stuff to it. But it's, you're not immersing yourself into it. You're
exactly. I tried to do the right morning one and right afternoon another.
Yeah, I did that. And
it just, I'm quite a linear person. I like to stick and go from A to B without detouring to Z and Y in between, you know.
What got me was actually seeing the deadline looming for one of them.
Yeah.
And just freaked me out. And I was like, well, if I can get this amount of words done for two, then how far into book one would I be? And actually that suits me better.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you find that for you, like a not a motivator in terms of mindset, but a motive, like a work motivator, is very much like the word count. So you're moving towards the deadline.
I don't know what you guys do, but I work on word count.
I do too.
Do you, Trudels?
Yeah.
How do you work, Trudy? Are you a one project at a time girl or more than
one? Yeah, I am. I'm like the other guys. I tried to work on a couple, but actually what happened, I went to a project management kind of seminar workshop thing years ago when I was working at Unitech, and one of the basic tenets that they talked about was the idea of how to manage multiple projects. And it was partially the idea of, or it was actually tasks within a project and how you had to have them sort of lined up, and then when one was finished, the next could start, all the rest of it. But it was also the idea that if you have, you know, say four projects on the go and you have a month to do them in, and each week in that month you do, you know, the first quarter of each of those four projects, you've now got four projects that are a quarter done and nothing is completed. Versus if you'd just worked on one project and you'd gotten all four quarters of that one project done, you would have one project fully completed. And so the idea is actually, do you want one project completely done or to be not finished on four? And be no, it's almost like being nowhere when you're not finished on four different projects. And it's kind of exactly what Cheryl was just saying. You know, she would rather be done of one on one actual book than halfway through two books, because you kind of you're nowhere if you're halfway through two books. So that has always stuck in my mind, the idea that, I mean, and I know some people, there's things that you have to do it multiple times, but and I know that there's writers successfully writing multiple books at one time and they can do that, and that's awesome. But just for me, I'm like these guys, I get overwhelmed by trying to remember or keep all of these different characters in my head, especially if I'm writing two different series. And I don't know why you'd be writing two books from one series at the same time. And it just, it's just one of those things where I'm trying to keep myself out of overwhelm. And if I'm focused and laser focused on one set of
laser focused.
It's like when you're reading a
laser
book, right?
beam.
Yes, laser beam. It's like when you're reading. For me, writing is very similar to reading, in that I get immersed in the world. If it's a good book and I love the characters, I get immersed in that world, and I literally don't want to come out into the real world, let alone another book's world. Like I almost don't get people reading multiple books at one time unless they're very, I don't know, one's a non-fiction and one's a fiction. Because when I'm reading in a book, I just love those characters so much. I want to be in that world and live their lives. And then same for me when I'm writing. I want to live in that world and be in there with them. Mm. And it's just, that's how my brain works, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And I I think that is, I mean, and I work with a traditionally published author and a self-published as well, and she refers to her afternoon writing project as her sandbox. It's her kind of playtime.
Yeah.
Not that she takes it any less seriously, but it's probably because she's working on perhaps self-published projects in the afternoon, it gives her more freedom to play, and she's not quite constrained by, you know, maybe contracts and that kind of thing. Mm. And with different deadlines as well. And and we've talked to many, as Trudy says, many authors that find working on two or more projects at a time works for them. It is very much an individual thing. I'm pretty sure that Becca Syme would say that it works on different strengths and that kind of thing.
Yeah, 100%.
I am one of those people that gets completely overwhelmed if I'm working on one project at a time.
It's, I feel overwhelmed.
Like I dive too much into it, and I can't. It's like diving into a really deep pool, and I can't. I panic and I can't get out.
And so, it's so funny like that, because I feel the opposite. It's like, if it's too many projects going on, I feel like I'm overwhelmed.
And I'm also person that probably is reading three different books at a time with bookmarks in different places. So it is very much my son reads 7 books at a time. Now, he is on the spectrum, so it's probably so am I. So maybe it's a how we're wired thing, but I just get so bored if I'm just doing one thing at a time, regardless of how exciting I find it. And I like using maybe I'm not creating fiction, but I might be doing creative work in another way, or writing marketing proposals for my real life job and all of that kind of stuff. And I like spreading the joy out, so there'll be parts that I prefer and parts that I don't prefer, and I just find it keeps me engaged. And So I would say try it. But I think I just want to go back to what you were saying, Wendy, just on a really basic level. We're talking about project management without using Asana software and all of that kind of stuff. And when I start talking about this stuff, these guys roll their eyes at me because, you know, that's me. But Wendy and I, when we worked together, we would do a basic like 12-month plan, and you knew that you had so many series, you know, these 4 particular series or 5 series, and you had to hit one book in each of those. So you'd sort of, okay, that's every 3 months in those series, and then you'd fill in the gaps. And Wendy is incredibly prolific, so she would be writing 5-6 books in a year at that time. But that was kind of enough of the an overview, if you like. So, but you know, with more books, comes more management. And, only it's not just enough to write the books, you've got to manage the marketing of the books,
and
manage
the
launching and all of that kind of stuff. And that for a lot of authors is where, you know, that's
when you're not a structured person.
Juggle those things as well.
When you're not a structured person. And whereas I do like structure as much as you guys don't think I do. I do like structure in many ways. I like a tidy house. I like to know where things are, but it's sort of like my cupboards are messy inside, but outside they look good. If you know what I mean, sort of like my writing.
Your brain is messy inside.
You know what I mean? It's sort of, I do like structure, but you know, I can't, and that's why I like to know what I'm writing, when I'm writing, and when the editor's due, and rah, 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 to have a deadline. But I don't like that structure within the creative side of writing.
Right.
But I think structure is, you can have it in so many ways. Like you can have just like a, you know, outlines, you could have, you know, something more in depth and then something more in depth, or you could like micromanage every single part of it. So there's lots of scope in there for all types of people. And I would just say that when you're starting out working on one project, you get that sense of gratification earlier, you know, because
like NaNoWriMo, you've got a month to focus and it just gets you over those kind of,
and even if at the end of it you think this is absolute pure rubbish, you achieved it though, didn't you? You achieved it, and now you've got something to work on.
And we can always find a reason not to write, right?
There's
something also to be said, what Cheryl was talking about, like you feel good about finishing the book. There's like a little, there must be like a, is it dopamine that you get when you feel good about something? Like there's a little bit of a hit that you get when you finish it. So the finishing one book versus being quarter of the way through 4 concept, is that you don't get that sense of achievement from finishing
the book. But you say that as though a single project person, and see, as a multi-project person, I use various tools, which I won't bore everybody with, but if you can see you're making progress through it, that still gives you that hit, that still gives you, because you've got like kind of subtasks or sub projects, or you know, if you're translating that to writing, you know, if you get to the do the first act or the, you know, first four chapters, you still get a hit from that. It doesn't mean that it's without wins along the way.
But
you might have to build in, if that's what, you know, floats your boat, you have to build in those wins. For me, you know, I am that person that will write down something that I've already done, so then I can tick it off my done list.
So you're basically, you've got like a whole ton of tabs open at once.
Constantly.
You know, whereas I'm the other way around. If I've got too many tabs open, I just curl into a ball and start rocking. I just,
it exhausts me. It exhausts me.
Totally exhausts me.
It's know thyself as well. And I mean, you know, I'm sure this will surprise nobody that's seen YouTube, but you know, none of us are in our 20s anymore, and so you get to know how you 30s yes, but in 20s no. Just joking. But you get, the older you get, the more you get to kind of test different things out, and it translates from other work into how you like to work in this job, and the authoring job does translate to how you, your happiest times, I think, or when I say happiest times, the ways you found working in other realms translates, I believe, to how you like to run your author career and your writing and approach project management personally. That's just my theory.
Yeah, I think that's true. The only other thing I would say is that, for example, writing a book to me is a different thing entirely from like the marketing of the book, and they take a different part of your brain. It's like a different kind of side of your brain. So marketing and the social media and the all those kinds of things, I can do multiple things along those process at a time. Like, you know, we do the podcast as well as doing everything else. Like, I can do those kinds of things, but there's something about the process of writing a book that takes you got to go in so deep that I just couldn't go that deep on multiple books.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously other people can. So I guess it's that whole thing of like, how does your brain work? And actually, this is where I'd recommend like doing the Becca Syme course or doing something like that to work out how your brain, I don't know, works, how to kind of get jumpstart that kind of process. It's like knowing that I'm an input person, so I love finding things out and learning more information and doing all that stuff, which is opposite probably to some of the other people in this current Zoom call.
How does it help you? I've always wondered, how does that help you by knowing? Because it doesn't change anything, because you're still you.
I think knowledge is power. I really do. And I think I thought for so long as why I wasn't like you guys, or why I wasn't like operating like I saw other people. And if you not only find people that operate the same way as you, there's a validation to that. Mm. There's also you're not broken. You don't need to be fixed. You work with your strengths, not your weaknesses. And for a lot of my life, I felt like I'm constantly looking to fix the perceived weaknesses instead of playing to my strengths. My strengths are that I'm good at doing lots of things. You know, I'm good at jumping to not necessarily jumping, but I need that kind of constant, like, and just go with that, you know, and understand that and accept that. So I think that's what it is. It doesn't change you, but I think it gives you an insight, and it gives you an acceptance, and it gives you that you can work with your strengths.
The number of times I've seen posts of someone saying, oh my God, I just did the Becca Syme course and she's made me feel so much better, that it's just this thing of mine that means that I want to write multiple genres because I get bored easily because of strength. And that makes it, and that's okay. Because I think a lot of us out there feel like there's something wrong with me. I'm not as organized as Cheryl is, so I must be doing something wrong. And if only I tried harder, I would be more organized. When actually maybe just organization is just not my strong point. But I do have other strong points that are just as valid, and that's okay. You know, and I think that's,
and I think you have to take into account too, are you a fast writer? You know, how long does it take you to write something? Are you going to get bored if you write a 120K book when a 60K book is actually in your wheelhouse, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so I think those sort of things. I only ask the question as kind of like the devil's advocate because we talk about it a lot.
I think it's good to, I mean, hopefully people are listening that, you know, they're either the one saying, but what about, and we're voicing the question for them, or, you know.
I totally admire you guys who can do that. Like, I totally admire that you can actually learn and learn and learn and learn and it doesn't derail you. For me, if I go out and see something and learn it, it just completely derails me because I'm like, I must do that if that works. You know, like, so for me, it was a sort of a, it was a defining moment when I realized in actual fact, I didn't have to take all those craft.
I always remember workshop. that conference that we went to with Bella Andre, and she said to you,
What are you doing in that craft thing? We've talked about this. You're not someone, you're like me, we don't do that.
And I was and
like,
the irony
she's just given me the permission to not have to do that.
To be you.
Exactly. Yeah. And the irony is, for me, I would love to be that person that can do that deep focus, you know, that Cal Newport book, read that, do the deep focus. And I mean, I tried. I can get up to 2 hours on one thing now. So, you know, I'm trying.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's the old story, isn't it? We always sometimes look across the paddock and we want to go in that grass there.
Yeah.
But I wanted to talk about too, or to mention that one of the things I picked up from some of our guests that we've had that are multiple project people at one time, they will often be writing two books, but they'll be writing at a different stage of the writing. So one book might be first draft and another book might be editing. And I think a lot of them have pointed out that works best for them. You know, they can't be doing two first drafts at once kind of thing, or two lots of editing of two different books. So I just wanted to kind of add that.
And also maybe like you might be writing the first draft of one book, but maybe you're plotting and planning and doing something for the next book in your head. So it doesn't mean that there's only ever one thing in your head and you can't be doing other stuff at different stages, like at different, because it is a different, in my mind anyway, again, it's my crazy, but it's a different kind of part of your brain to be plotting and planning and figuring out what you're going to do in the next book versus writing the current book, you know, or maybe.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
It's like having little cubby holes, isn't it? And you go from one to the other, but if there's nothing to go between them to shut them off, then it can get really blurred and quite messy.
And messy.
And I wanted to say too that to be sure that by starting a new project, you're not in actual fact procrastinating. Because I know when I've done my first draft and now I have to get into the in depth of it, that's not quite as exciting to me.
I'm the other way around.
And like doing an edit, that's not exciting to me. So another project is looking pretty spicy right now. Like, yeah, I could get into it. And especially if you're already on that track of thinking about what it's going to be. So, just be aware of that, I think.
Absolutely.
And I think it's really understanding this sort of thing is good because you understand how easily you can get overwhelmed. And for me, I can easily get overwhelmed if I've got too many balls in the air. I'm not like you guys in so far as if I know that I have to do that, you know, I just basically curl into a ball. I'm like, I don't know where to start. Someone help me. I don't know what to do, you know. So that's when I have to sit down and just write what's important, what do I need to do, and I put a date beside them, and then that sort of helps me out. But I can't.
Always make your deadlines. You're amazing like that.
I do try to, but at the same time, you know, like I say, it's not as easy as you think. I mean, it's really hard.
And we all throw our hands up in the air, don't we?
We have these great ideals that we want to do, and then something will wham will hit you from left with your life.
Well, we've all got families, right? We've got kids, and
I mean, it's all very well us structuring it in us. I use that as a, you know, general we, that, you know, we've got our structure or how we like to work, but the outside world, you know, exists and things happen.
Understand. Leave us alone. It's not happening.
I can't see you.
I can't see you. La, 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 la.
And also it also, you know, there is, I mean, you guys are full-time writers at home, but I mean, for people that are part-time writing as well as working a full-time job or part-time job or other things as well, there's a limit on how many projects I think like physically you can handle too, you know. So I think that comes into the equation as well, doesn't it?
Even emotionally, right? Like that's what we all found during COVID. It's like your emotional or your mental capacity is sort
of totally
different to when you kind of everything is easy and you don't have any issues going on around you.
I feel like I'm only just starting now to just, you know, have more tabs open, as we say.
Well, finding the flow zone is really hard too, you know, like and that's another thing that comes with more having to write more books, is that that flow zone that you wrote really well in when you didn't have the pressure doesn't come as easily as it does when you do have the pressure, you know.
Yeah,
so it's all just sort of different things.
And I think maybe we could go over some of the what your perceived pros and cons are about your own working. So for example, let's go with Wendy. Let's start with you. So what would you say your best pro of how you work is in terms of working on one project at a time? Would it be staying in the story?
I'm a deadline girl, so I can procrastinate for a little while and then I like to really have a good run at it. So if I know that I say have 4 weeks to write a book, I usually faff around for the first few days and tell myself I've got ages, and then I go, oh, I haven't got ages. So I'll sit down and work until that's done, and that's till 2 a.m. if I have to. And then once that's done, I'll just down tools and come out of it. And Blake goes, oh, there she is, she's back. My husband will go, oh, she's back. You know, like, so that's me. I can get into the deep state and nail out a book if I have to be done, even if I don't want to. I suppose that's my pro.
That's a superpower, to be fair.
Well, I don't know about that, but
no, it is.
I don't let anything else distract me. So it's probably selfish as well. So everything else is put away.
It's that focus, and that's awesome.
I also am incredibly competitive. And I don't mean that with myself. So if I've got a deadline and I look at it and like someone will say to me, man, that's a tight deadline, you're not going to do it. And I'm like, watch this space, buddy. You know, like, so I compete with myself. I'll go, there's no way you can write 6,000 words today and that's what you need to hit because you didn't do enough yesterday. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, I damn well can, you know? And so boom. So that competitiveness helps me.
What about you, Cheryl?
I'm just in awe of Wendy, really. If I have a 5,000 word day, I'm like just over the moon, and it's so rare. I'm constantly aspiring to it, but I very rarely achieve it. So I feel like a lot of the time I'm always playing catch up, but I try and get that under control by the end of the week, so that the next week I get to start fresh, you know, like I've still got this many to do this week, but I actually did achieve it last week. Not in the way that I planned necessarily, but that's okay. You know,
yeah, but so I think
what are your pros?
Just talking about word count, spacing your word count's vital. Trudy actually got me onto this, and that was writing 1,000 words and then walking away, and 1,000 words and then walking away. I have 1,000 words written and then in bed in the morning before my feet hit the floor. That's my goal.
Before you even go to the toilet.
Yeah.
Wow, that's impressive.
Well, that's not
going to
happen.
But no, I'll just pick up my laptop
first.
My husband will make me a cup of tea, and I'll just sit here. He's listening to the radio, and I'll smash out 1,000 words, and I've already started my day.
And what a great way to start the day.
You know, and so I put that down, and then I go, okay, well, that's 1,000 off, and it's only 8 o'clock. So okay, you know, and so that's like Trudy said, you know, like having that timer running for however long, 30, 40 minutes, stop, get up, walk around, da-da-da, back. You'll be amazed at how soon that word count builds.
Yeah. Nice. The Trudy J method. Mm-hmm.
Trudy J doesn't always do what she says, but
do as I say.
Do as I say, not as I do. I was doing that for a while there. I haven't been doing that recently, though. But now that you've motivated me, I'm going to do that today.
Actually, we're coming into winter, so this actually sounds quite pleasant to sit in bed for an hour and get 1,000 words down. That'd be pretty cool.
If I tried to sit in bed for an hour, Zoe would come and jump up and down on top of me. But
if I just have a dog.
I'd get the dog,
But actually, you didn't say in terms of the question, Cheryl, what your pro was. What do you think is the best thing about writing the way you do in terms of the project?
I get it done. No, I think it's really important to have that sense of achievement, that, you know, and I'd like to do better. I've tried different ways, but this is me for now, and it may change again. But I think being happy with where you are, you know, that's you know, you can try and change things if you're not happy, but to be happy, you have to acknowledge it and revel in it, really.
I think that's excellent advice. Yeah, absolutely. What about you, Trudy? What's your biggest pro?
I just think the ability to deep dive into the story and kind of get in depth with those characters, and also to leave it to not have the overwhelm of trying to do too much, of kind of trying. There's a lot of times where we look out there and go, oh, look, there's these other authors doing it this other way, and that must be better, you know, that whole comparisonitis thing. And I just think kind of being able to be confident and say, no, this is my process and this is a good way for me, and it makes me happy, like Cheryl says, you know, like this, why would we do this if it wasn't something that was making us happy? So
it's taken all of us some time to get to where we are, right?
And like I say, you can be in awe of people, you know, you can, because some people are just absolutely amazing and mind-blowing, but that's not you. So you have to, you know, say, wow, that would be great, and then you have to move on.
But I think we're all have the capacity to be awesome, amazing in our own ways.
We're not capacity, we already are.
We all are. Okay, listen, yes, you're right, Wendy.
Including everybody listening.
But yeah, exactly. Like I think maybe we just have to remember everyone has their own journey. Everyone, so you might look at someone and go, oh my God, look at that person. They're cracking out 10K words a day, but you don't know what's behind that, what else is happening in their life, what else is, you know, what their journey is. And it's just different for all of us. And that's okay. Like, we're all awesome and amazing, and we are all doing great things. And it's just remembering that our awesome and great thing is not exactly the same as someone else's.
Absolutely.
And comparisonitis is not necessarily a bad thing, right? But make sure who you're comparing yourself with is a good example, you know, and like I sometimes I'll go, oh, why is that person got all those awards? Why are they, you know, rah, 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 rah. And yet she's saying to me, oh, well, I really respect the way you write and da, da, da. So, you know, we're all going to, it's just human nature that we're going to compare ourselves to someone else.
Yeah.
But just don't let it become a real thing, you know, like it. You're who you are. Do the best that you can, because it will hinder you in the long run.
Don't compare yourself. Be inspired by other people.
Yes.
Don't, because comparison has this a hint of judgment. Like, I'm judging myself because I'm not doing it the way Wendy does. Versus Wendy's awesome. Wouldn't it be great to be like Wendy? What can I do to be more like Wendy? Which
is, see, I would be the same with you too, the way you learn, because I always have this thing about I must learn more, I must spend time, I must leave time, and I never do it.
I just don't think, I think you need to let go of that, Wendy, and just accept that
I just learn from you.
And
you should tell me what we need to know.
In my Outlook, it has a new format where you know, you pin stuff that you really want to get to. I have to scroll through all my pin stuff to get to my new emails because there's so many there that are just sitting there. And I, you know, I go through them every now to get and delete some and delete some. But, you know, there are lots of things that I'd like to learn and lots of things I'd like to know. But there's only so much time.
I think I've taken two or three courses in my lifetime with writing, and I've only ever got through the bits that I want to get through. I have never gone from the start to the finish.
But you know what? That's okay too. As a wise person. Week, and just saying, just a heads up on how she manages her overwhelming learning desire and courses, that it's okay to pick out, because it's always, in every course there's going to be things that are relevant and things that aren't. And I think give yourself permission to skip through the stuff.
I think that's the best way to do it. Why listen to all the boring guff that you don't want to listen to?
Because the linear person within me
wants to go
Well, you need to get over that. What if there was something you missed?
And that's, you can do that in multiple, like I'm just thinking, when I decided I wanted to know what my Clifton strengths were, and I started looking on Becca Syme's website, and I was looking up all the different courses, and I was like, bugger this, I don't want to do a course. And so I just went straight to them and I said, look, how do I do this? What's the best way? And they said, well, you could do a coaching call. It's like, that's me. I'm going to do it. Yeah. And I just did a 1 hour coaching session with Becca. I did the Clifton Strengths thing before I did the session. She looked at that before we had the session. She sat me down and said this, this, and this, and that's how it. And so I just spent that time, you know, instead of doing the whatever it was, 6 week course and you know, like, and maybe I would have gotten more information from doing the 6 week course, but I didn't want all that extra information. Mm. I just wanted to know what my strengths were. And I just wanted to talk to Becca about it and have her tell me one-on-one. And
I would rather have that.
Yeah. And I think you
better
can do
use
that.
Of your time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's so why I go to YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Like you go to YouTube and you look up exactly what you want to know. You find the one video on exactly what you want to know. Hopefully it's by a reputable person and you listen to that versus faffing around and buying.
I don't read.
Or you come and listen to a Spy Girls podcast.
Yeah. Well,
hey,
listen to us riffing off about nothing for the.
Yeah. Okay. So wrapping this up, we're coming to the end of our time here. So if somebody's unsure about like what's the best method for managing projects for themselves, if they're, you know, fairly new in their career, what would be your advice of how they go about figuring it out?
You're talking writing project?
Yes, book projects, yes.
Well, probably for me it would be Scrivener, if that's what you mean.
No, is that what you mean? I mean how they figure out their best process.
You just have to try it. You just have
to try it.
I mean, if you've never written a book, you have to do that first. Because only by writing a book will you know how long it takes.
Yeah.
So how many can you fit into a year? Or, you know, how many words do you need per week or things like that?
And just write one book. Don't write and don't rewrite the first three chapters of the same book for 10 years.
No.
Like, and if you're an organized person, get the word count you want, break it down into X amount of days, however long he wants you to write it. Put that total at the top of your diary if you're someone who works with something like that, and then just cross that little sucker off every day if that works for you.
Yeah.
That can be quite a good motivator.
Yeah. Mm. I think building some rewards would be my advice. Absolutely. Rewards along this way.
We're not talking chocolate necessarily.
Not
but
necessarily.
It works.
If it works, you know, that's fine too. And I would also think too, you know, look, I would just say cut yourself some slack. Like, I think it's very, very easy to look around and think everybody else has got their SHIT together and are more productive and are publishing 17 million books a year and you're struggling to get two out, kind of thing, you know, nobody has it all together. You know,
people may look like they have, but they haven't.
It took us years to write our first book.
And that's very common. How many, in fact, I would say pretty much everybody that we've had on the podcast, author-wise, has
5 years it took me.
Yeah.
Not everyone. Sometimes people are just write a book, get it up. We've had a few of those on the podcast, but it's no, you know, it just people work differently.
We don't like them though, right?
I don't know. We've liked everyone who's been on the podcast. But I will say on terms of that is if you're doing something and it has taken you 5 years and you're still not finished your first book, maybe that's time to sort of stop and reevaluate and look for new ways to do it.
Yeah.
Like look at what, like, and not in a judgy, horrible way, just assess, just kind of be curious, look at what you've been doing, maybe figure out what it is about it that's not working and try something new. Like that's all you're doing. And that's all we've done in the courses of our careers is something's not quite working. Something's a squeaky wheel. So we oil it and we figure out how to get it back on track and
don't overcomplicate it.
Or you change the tire and do a different tire.
And don't overcomplicate it. Like we often talk about why you're writing, what's your reasons, you know, you're writing just for fun, or you write, but for the first book, you just need to get that sucker down.
You just need to do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And the second book and the third book, just to be clear.
Yeah.
Book number 50.
Mm. Okay. So Trudy, where can we be found?
God knows. I don't know. That's why I always ask someone else. Okay, spygirlspodcast.com.
Nice.
And we can be found on Facebook, so you can pop in there and see us. We have set up recently this amazing thing called Patreon for the Spy Girls. So if you have any desire at all to go and support us, to buy us a cup of coffee, to help us out.
We would love that.
We would love
that. Grease our wheels.
We've been doing this for free for the last 6 years, and we loved it. We no pretending here. We love doing what we do. We really enjoy it. We still need a
coffee.
But we do like our coffees. We do enjoy our muffins sometimes.
Yeah.
So if you want to come and do that for us, we would be very, very grateful. We would be appreciative. So that would be awesome. So I don't know how to find that. Patreon.com.
It's just patreon.com/SpaGirlsPodcast.
Yeah. And there's extras. You can get extras as it is.
Lots and lots of extras, including a monthly checklist that Trudy has put a great deal of, well, all of us, but particularly Trudy has done her monthly.
And our handouts every month.
Yeah. Get into it, and our checklist and our
Facebook group,
you name it. It's all there and we're here for you. So
thank
you very much for listening, and we hope this has been of some help.
See you all next time.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.